So, on my way driving here to your house, there was a black cat that crossed my path. I'm not even kidding. Like, I was driving and this black cat darted right out in front of my car and I hit the brakes really fast and it was very close. And I was like, wow, this feels maybe like a sign. Never see black cats anymore. Certainly don't see them jumping out in the middle of the road. So, what do you think that means, Jules?
I think that means the cat was scared of your car.
I mean, I'm driving it, so like, I would be scared too. A smart cat. Hey everybody, I'm here with my friend Jules Bindi, who is a super mom, multiple-time entrepreneur who appeared on Shark Tank for something related to pets, and I'm blanking on the name, which is embarrassing. She just released her first book called, oh, thank you. Okay. She just released the first book in a series of stories on emotional intelligence called the Harmony Hills Collection. The book is called My Body, My Rules, and it teaches children about boundaries and respect, which is super relevant to this episode because we are going to be talking about forgiveness. So, welcome to my show, Jules.
Thanks, Paige. We've been trying to get together for possibly over a year, and we finally made it happen. So I'm really happy to have you here in my home and to see your face and see what we talk about on the podcast.
Yeah, time is kind of meaningless now. Just post 2020, everything just feels like it's wrapped together. Like, what is time? So, tell me your story. What was your entry point into the emotional intelligence space?
I would say I started when I was around 23 years old. And I think I was more aware of things that I was saying because of a thing called manifestation. People always say, well, how is emotional intelligence manifestation anywhere similar? Well, basically, in your emotional state is how you manifest. So when I started learning emotional intelligence and manifestation, I was more careful with my words and the energy I put behind things. So I really dived in to emotional intelligence, though, about 5 years ago in a program called. I was here in Austin, Texas. But yeah, emotional intelligence now, it's a part of me. It's a part of who I am. And then I said, wait a second. Why isn't there that many books about emotional intelligence for children? Our children is the number one biggest teacher of us all. And we're programming our kids on how to speak, act, feel everything. So what better way in writing books about emotional intelligence to support their blueprint in a really young, healthy age?
Okay, before we delve deep into this subject, can you just set the stage for my listeners? Jules, what is emotional intelligence? And also, what is manifestation? Everybody is always trying to manifest things. They're telling me manifest, manifest, manifest. I remember Manifest Destiny from second grade. It's like you're gonna reach California. Tell me, Jules, what do those mean?
Well, emotional intelligence is the ability to understand and manage and express your emotions efficiently while recognizing and empathizing with others and others' feelings. Unlike IQ, for instance, it's not so much as it's fixed because you can still develop a higher IQ, but with EQ, it's a skill that can grow with practice and awareness. So that's why it's so important to teaching, for instance, kids emotional intelligence in such an early age. Because EQ is the way of life, especially when AI is so strong now. So the difference is IQ won't be such a strong need because AI is going to do everything for us. But EQ is where we're going to get real connection. And that's something that AI may not be able to properly process in the future.
You don't think the robots are going to have feelings?
Well, we're hoping they're not going to have complete feelings. And we're hoping, a lot of people are hoping that they won't, because people are people. And a lot of people do not have emotional intelligence way of thinking. So if people are treating robots like people are treating each other, it's going to be an Armageddon for sure. Because if you're beating a robot that is stronger than you or powerful you and smarter than you, you're holding a double-ended sword.
Now I see why that black cat crossed my path. All right, Sunday scaries. Thursday scaries. What? Don't laugh at me. Scary. If someone does not have very high EQ, would you consider them to be a robot?
So if someone doesn't have, you said if somebody doesn't have a high EQ, they have a high IQ, would I consider them a robot?
Yes. Think about, I mean, we live in Austin. Think about maybe some of the guys you've gone on dates with. I don't know. Think about people we see at co-working coffee shops. Someone who has insanely high IQ, but no ability. Like, their emotional range is like that of a teaspoon. They just don't have very much.
I actually met somebody that had zero EQ and only a high IQ. And this man, brilliant. I mean, absolutely brilliant, Paige. Is he a robot? No. Was he born with a different type of brain that we have? 100%. I'm trying to remember his name. I do not recall his name, but he was the guy that had a TV show that was filmed after him called Scorpion. It's about this boy from Ireland, and he was so smart that he hacked into, I think it was NASA, and they ended up going and finding him in this little farm in Ireland and took him away. And this is the guy that I'm talking about that I met. He told me specifically that he has a therapist that teaches him how to communicate with people so it can sound like and feel like he has EQ. For instance, he says, even if my mother died, this is a quote, even if my mother died, I would not feel anything, end quote.
Have you heard of alexithymia? It sounds like he might have that. Kind of curious, this is like just a one-off question. When you meet someone, how easy is it for you to gauge their emotional intelligence levels? Like, how long does that take?
So repeat the question. It's basically, how do you tell what the people's emotional intelligence, or how can you read their emotional emotions?
No, I just mean you specifically. Like, when you meet someone, how easy is it for you to go, this person is very emotionally intelligent, or they're not? Like, is it just like a vibe you get?
You know, I ask questions. I engage with them. I ask them, how do you feel about this? Like you, Paige, you ask such great questions. And you engage so well with people, you can see where they're at and the way they react to certain things. You're very aware of people. You're very engaged. So it's just like what I do is when I speak to somebody, I can see if they're closed off or they're open by their body language. They're either closed with their arms crossed or they're open with their arms open and wide and just their heart open. To me, it took a lot of practice. I wasn't always aware of it. But now it's turned more into an energy reading where I see people's light and I can also see people's darkness. We all have darkness. We all have light. And we all have different mood swings and different feelings throughout the day, right? I have the ability to be able to see people for what they're going through at that moment and be able to support and empathize with them in order for them to feel better. I would say it's a superpower that I've developed through my life. I don't think I've always had that. Because as a child, I was more very self-centered. I was not emotionally intelligent. I played victim. I was abused. I was hurt. I was picked on. I was beat up on. And I was lonely. And it was all about me. It was all about me, my health, and my life, because I didn't feel like I even liked my life. So why should I care about other people's life? I think that's more of why I can tell what people's emotions are, is because I've been through them all. Does that make sense?
Yes, it totally does. That actually brings me to my next question, which is, what are the main emotions? What are they called? And what do they mean?
The main emotions are happiness, sadness, anger, fear, and disgust. Those are the universal signals designed to protect and guide us. For example, happiness helps us bond and seek joy. Like when we met, it was happiness. Like, I'm like, oh my God, who is this woman? She's so funny. And so she asks a lot of questions.
No, it's embarrassing. I met you at a party and you're like, I like your big eyes. And I was like, I like your outfit. And I probably asked a lot of questions. I don't know. Teen detective. Okay. So those are the main emotions.
Yeah. And so sadness, for instance, allows us to reflect and connect with others during loss. Anger, it pushes us to defend what matters. Fear alerts us to danger. And disgust, it keeps us safe from harmful things. Like, and these emotions help us survive as a species and to continue to guide our relationships and our decisions.
Oh, that's like that movie Inside Out. I remember the main character in it, her main emotion was joy. And all of her choices in life were guided by joy. Jules, what's your main emotion? What is it now? What guides you?
Well, to add on to the other part about, because some people are like, well, there's other emotions and emotions are not just, you know, responses or, you know, like they're just not feelings. They're also, I just want to add though, Paige, is emotions are also trauma responses.
What? Everything's a trauma response now. Oh my God. It's like everybody's always, I'm just not teasing. I just, I feel like everywhere I go, everyone's like, what's your trauma? Like the Enneagram, it's like, I'm a two, which is a giver. And when I was telling someone, they're like, oh, so all these adults were trying to make you do things when you were a kid for them. I was like, well, don't put it like that. It wasn't like that. But yeah, it kind of was. Yeah, trauma. Okay, whatever. Tell me more.
No, it's like, it's really useful. Like that cat that ran across your car, like that was a trauma response. Run, run for your life. It's like, it's really useful if you're running from a lion, for instance. But when you're not running from a lion, you're actually harming yourself in a way, the way you're reacting. As in for the emotions that you're asking for Inside Out, it just, wow, they had such a beautiful way in visualizing all those emotions coming to reality. Like that was so beautifully done. My main emotion, I would say, would be hope. I'm driven by hope. I don't know if you know what human design is, but I am a manifester, spike wave 1-3. What's the look?
By nature, I am a very baseline agnostic person. I love personality tests. I love these kinds of things, and they're just fun to get into. But I don't want to sidetrack us. So you're a manifester. Then you had a bunch of cool stuff after that. Tell me more.
Well, as a manifester, you're motivated by something, and mine is hope. Some people are motivated by fear. Some are motivated by success or whatever that is. Whew. Hope has carried me through challenges, and it has fueled my resilience. Wow, if I can even tell you all the things, we don't even have enough time to go through all that. But determination ensured I took action and to create positive outcomes for my life when I probably shouldn't have had a positive outcome in my life with the things that I went through and that's happened for me. But I believe emotions like hope are what drive us to rewrite our stories. And I've definitely done that and rewritten mine a few times.
Yeah. So just as an FYI for my listeners, Jules asked me to not talk or ask her questions about the things she just discussed. I just want you all to know that no matter what you think it is, it was worse. I'm being very honest. So my main emotion is disgust. That is what has carried me throughout my life, Jules. And the stuff that happened to you just really spiked that for me. So yeah, you're just going to have to trust me, listeners. So you say emotions are a trauma response. How can we know if an emotion we are holding on to is serving us or if it is further keeping us locked in our trauma? What would someone do if they wanted to kind of suss out how they were feeling?
I feel all feelings are good. I feel anger is amazing. I feel fear is amazing. Happiness, joy, everything is incredible for your body to hold. But it's about holding it and releasing it and letting it go. It's about acknowledging it and loving it and saying hello to it. And again, what we're here to speak about as well is forgiveness. So you can be angry at somebody and express yourself in a healthy way, but it's all about how you express yourself is what really matters in the long run. Because you can be angry and vengeful and upset and disgusted and hold on to that, and it can really hurt you. It's going to hurt you more than it's going to hurt that person that did that to you. And I can even say something else that might trigger people, which I'm going to say because I trigger people, is how did that happen for me? And everything, if you change the story in a positive way, it's like, wow, how did that happen for me? Ooh, I am so blessed this happened for me. And it will give you your power back. And then forgiveness comes because you're taking responsibility for it. You're not saying, well, you did this. You're saying, oh, how did this support me? What did I learn from this? Rather than turning into a negative response.
I've actually been thinking about this quite a lot lately. You know, we both have a lot of friends who are in the personal development and wellness space. And there is a huge premium put right now on positive language, positive thoughts, positive vibes. Overall, I do think that's a good thing. Personally speaking, I would prefer to look at the positive and see the good of things, because otherwise, you're right, you're just going to walk around making yourself miserable and making everyone around you miserable, and then your life is going to get worse. I feel like sometimes people who are overwhelmingly positive in their language about every single bad thing that's ever happened to them, sometimes I notice there's a slight undertone of them not really being that happy about it. And they're like aggressively pushing their like language and their positive vibes and their positive feelings on you. I think that's kind of destructive. What do you think about this phenomenon and what do you have to say about it?
I love that you said this. I've experienced it myself. Destructive to whom? Pushing positive energy and trying to support people reframing. Is it destructive to them or is it destructive to the person they are talking to and speaking to? Let's first take them. Yeah. Destructive to them. They're doing this because they have so much trauma and so much hurt and so much pain that this is less destructive than the other way. So if you look at a person that's being completely positive and hoorah and oh, and let me sage you and positive vibes only. And you're just like, I don't like sage. I don't like palisanto in my face. I don't need to be smudged. Get out of my face. I believe it's more for them trying to recalibrate their body regulation. And they're wanting to see if that's going to be supporting someone else in a sense, because they weren't able to do it for themselves. Paige, I know so many people, like you just said, that are doing this, and I know their trauma and I know what they went through. And some people have seen, you know, one person I'm thinking of, they saw their father die in front of them, like murdered in front of them. And they are trying their best to always think positively, because if not, they will visualize their father getting slaughtered in front of them. Is it destructive for them? No. Is it destructive for the person? That is, I think, your trauma that you get to deal with. If you feel someone's pushing something on you, your positivity, you're not speaking your mind and your voice to them. You get to say, hey, I'm not feeling very positive today. Or, you know, are you okay with just sitting with me and listening to why I don't want to feel this positivity? I have something I want to say and speak about that I haven't cleared out of my energy yet. And me thinking positive is suppressing. And I know you would not want me to suppress. So are you able to be that friend to hold space for me so I can scream and rage with you? And then we can do the hoorah and all that saging and stuff, because I'm not feeling like I wanted to be smudged right now. You're smudging me with the wrong type of affirmations.
I don't want anyone to smudge me. Oh my God, I didn't know that was a word. They take like, I'm just kidding. You can smudge me if you want. We met at Soho House. I think a lot of people smudge there. So when you talk about suppression, the reason I talk about people who are engaging in what some people call toxic positivity. Some people say it's bad because if you don't deal with the emotion you're actually feeling, it is going to come up later in ways that you may not want. So this poor guy, his dad got murdered in front of him. That's very different than just died. Wow. Oh my gosh. Sadness, rage, desire for vengeance. Those are all really normal emotions to experience and feel. And if he doesn't deal with them, if he doesn't express them, they may come out later. Like it could be 5 weeks from now, 5 months from now, 10 years from now. It could be when he is at the DMV or, you know, like it could just come out later. Tell me what you think about that.
But how do you know he hasn't dealt with it? What story are you creating about that person? That's the smudger. That's the toxic positivity. How do you know that they didn't deal with that and get rage out? Because if I did tell you too that that person actually met the person that killed his father and said, I forgive you, and was sincere about it, because that's the work that that person went through. It doesn't mean that he's going to forget what happened, the visual context of seeing what he saw. But this person knows what's possible for forgiveness and positive affirmations and thinking the right way. And he wants it so bad for other people. It can be toxic. Because he's not allowing other people to express, maybe, or like what you're saying is the toxic positivity is not welcome with some people.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Okay, so you're talking about someone who went through something really traumatic and has released the emotion, but maybe other people haven't accepted that he has. The type of thing I'm talking about is like you meet people who are like, their jobs are reliant on them being positive. And so sometimes they express positivity and they may not feel it. That's what I'm talking about.
People have their own karma.
Well,
people have their own karma. People have their own attachments. People are going to hold on to things that no longer are serving them for numerous amounts of times. Like I held on to a relationship for too long. I should have left. He should have left, but we didn't leave. We were still hanging on to something that wasn't there. And again, hope. go back to the emotional intelligence. Maybe they're hanging on to hope, hope that it's going to get better, hope that it's going to turn around and they're going to love each other fully again. And maybe if I say it as much as I want to say it to everybody, then it's going to become true and it's going to be so amazing again. And then it's not. They're like, oh, that's my karma. And then they get to do the cord cutting ceremonies and all that stuff that they wanted. Do you know, you looked at me like you don't know what a cord cutting ceremony is.
That is what happens when you have a child and you're cutting the cord, the umbilical cord. What in the Austin, Texas is this?
Yes, that's what in the Austin, Texas is this. That is hilarious. I want to use that one. When people are in a relationship, when they are intimate with each other, it is said that you have a energetic cord to that person, like an umbilical cord, like having birth. You're birthing something together. You're birthing a relationship. Some people say there's three people in a relationship. There's you, there's the other person, and then there's a relationship. And when you cut the cord, you're cutting the cord to that relationship. So yes, when you break up with somebody that you love and you are so attached to them, or someone that you love dies and you just want to move on and you can't, sometimes cord cutting ceremonies supports people. And I've actually witnessed these ceremonies happen. And I've actually done one with my ex-husband.
Whoa. Okay. So going back to what we were talking about earlier with the guy whose dad was murdered in front of him, why do you think it's so easy for some people to just forgive others when something bad happens to them? I feel like there are so many people I meet and they really just, they're like you, they've been through really horrific things and yet they're able to let go and release and forgive people pretty instantly. One of my friends recently, like the whole thing, her house burned down. Her boyfriend ended up being really emotionally abusive and then the LA fires happened and she lost everything again, or she lost like a lot of things. And she's like pretty happy. She's not expressing what I would call toxic positivity. She is genuinely just happy. I meet people who get upset about a parking ticket they got 5 years ago. Like there are some people who just like have the personality where they will just hold on to things. Why is that? And if someone wanted to become more of the instantly forgiving type person, or not, or wanted to go the other way, what could they do?
Every brain works different. We were all raised differently, different situations, different circumstances, different colors, shapes, sizes. You're assuming it's easy. That's an assumption. And I can understand why people would assume things are easy. We just don't know how many reps they've put in. We only see the outcome. And sometimes what we see is the results and the reps that they've put in the past. Maybe that person, your friend, your girlfriend who lost so many things, maybe so many bad things happened to her in her past that she's put those reps in when she was a child and it makes it easier for her than it would have for you or another person. For me, I've had reps since I was 4. Trigger warning, I watched my sister get molested in front of me when I was 4 by my neighbor. And that man, that boy, he was 16 at the time, his brother was our best friend. So we still saw them all the time for however many years he lived next door. I got to learn how to, like you said, push feelings under the rug and be like, I get to forgive, I get to forgive, I get to forget. But that was also toxic behavior because I allowed more abuse to come into my life and manifested a lot of different other circumstances, situations. But I learned forgiveness. I put more forgiveness reps into it. So I know what it felt like to try to forgive, to be in somebody's presence and not think about what happened and to be able to be present in that situation. There's a joke. A man walks into the bar and he sees Van Gogh sitting at the bar. And he says, oh my God, Van Gogh, can you please draw something for me on this napkin? He says, sure, it's going to be $100,000. It's like, what are you saying? I just asked you to draw something for me. You're going to charge me $100,000? He said, yes, because just because I can draw something very quickly doesn't mean that that's what my value is. I'm drawing something that's taken me 20, 30 to 40 years to do. And that's why I still value myself at $100,000 for this napkin, because he put his reps in.
So when you talk about this person, I think most people would agree someone who does that is objectively at the bottom rungs of humanity. What is the benefit of forgiving someone who is like that?
What if I told you this little boy was a foster care child, that this family adopted him because nobody else wanted him, that he was abused, that he was assaulted, that he was molested as well, and they gave this kid a chance. And the only way he knew how to show love and give love was to molest.
Understand that most people who abuse, especially sexually abuse, were victims themselves. However, the vast majority of people who were abused do not actually go on to abuse others. What makes this person different or deserving of special treatment?
Again, raised differently. We don't know what his upbringing was. We don't know what his birth family did to him. We don't know how that programmed his brain. And we don't know how his brain is wired. The only thing we can do is trust that the person that is being abused, that it stops with them. And that's where emotional intelligence comes in.
There are a lot of ways you can divide people in the world, but I think a good one is people who value mercy or people who value justice. I think it's really important to have a balance of both of those types of people in the world. As you know, and I'm sure many people can tell, I definitely value justice over mercy. I feel like you value mercy over justice. Do you feel like the world benefits from both sides, or is it better if we all try to be more merciful?
I say it's for the person that wants to get the justice, that wants to be merciful. It's choice. It's personal choice. For me, I choose forgiveness. Got my throat.
You got to forgive your sickness.
I think they're separate. I think you can get judgment and still forgive because it's more about protecting others and also protecting yourself for something to stop, but still being able to be merciful. Justice and merciful.
I read a story about this a really long time ago and always remembered it because I think it very clearly defines what people mean when they're like, oh, do you value justice or mercy? So there's a woman, she's living in a Middle Eastern country. Don't remember the name of it. She refused someone's hand in marriage and she was a victim of an acid attack. Very surprisingly, when her family sued the attacker, he was found guilty and she was given the opportunity to pour acid in his eyes. Yeah, we're getting into the heavy stuff. So she ultimately decided not to. He ruined her life and she decided to have mercy for him. I can understand why someone would want to do that. That is, you know, that's what mercy looks like. Justice would have been pouring acid in his eyes. It's like, when I think about justice versus mercy, like the question about what you value more, that to me feels like a pretty good example of what that looks like in practice.
I think that's more revenge than justice. I think that's also getting confused. I don't think that's justice, pouring acid in someone's eyes. I think we are better people and better humans than want to do that. That's animalistic. That is somebody that doesn't understand how to process emotions. I can understand why some people would say, if you killed my daughter, I will murder you. People have done this. Someone killed someone's child. They will go and they'll murder that person. You killed my daughter, I'm going to kill you. That's revenge. That's anger. I don't feel that's justice. I feel justice is needed. I feel justice is hopefully the guy that did not get his eyes burned out with acid actually got some sort of form of justice other than that. Because some people do need to be rehabilitated. Some people do need to be thrown into jail to keep other people safe. Because there might be something that's off in their brains that we don't know, that we don't understand, a chemical reaction, a bipolar disorder, or something that gives them the permission internally to say, I have the right to do this to people. Hurt people hurt people. And Paige, it's so sad that some people think that it's okay to do this to people. And it's not. Justice should happen. But forgiveness should happen for you. Has nothing to do with them. And that woman who forgave that man, or maybe she didn't even forgive him. Maybe she just made the right choice to say, I am not this man. I choose to be a better person. I choose to allow him to see what he did to me for the rest of his life. Maybe the justice for her was, you get to look at me, what you did to me, and knowing that I saved you. Maybe that's her justice.
If someone wanted to become more enlightened in that way and get better at the practice of forgiveness, what would you suggest they do? Everyone always says, forgive, 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 forgive. But no one actually tells you how to do it.
Forgiveness starts with forgiving yourself for every lie you've ever told yourself, for everything that you said you're going to do, big and little. I told myself I was going to go to the gym. I didn't go. I lied to myself. Do you forgive yourself or are you going to shame yourself? Oh, I'm fat. You don't want to go. Like, you know what I mean? It's like every single lie leads up to another lie and to a bigger thing. And then you start losing your trust in yourself. And then what happens if you stop trusting yourself? Do you know?
feel like you're going to tell me.
How are you going to trust other people if you can't even trust yourself? So then you start losing hope in people and hope in humanity because you lost hope in yourself. So in order for you to start forgiving, you get to start with yourself first. You start going back, forgiving yourself for every single person that you've harmed, every single person that you've made fun of, every single thing that you said nasty to your sister, your brother, your mom, your dad. Start with the people that you care about the most and work backwards. It'd be like me calling one of my ex-boyfriends from back in the day. I'm so sorry I broke your heart. I'm so sorry I didn't give you an explanation. And then just going from there and then forgiving yourself. You don't have to go back. It's like, you know, I've never done AA, but there's steps to this as well. And this supports forgiveness in many ways. So if anyone here is wanting to explore forgiveness, I suggest looking at the steps to AA. Time warping, changing your stories. How did this happen for me? How thankful am I that I did what I did in my past in order to get me to where I am today, in order to be the person I am today? Because I really care about people. And before, I didn't even care if I lived. I didn't care, Paige. So it took a lot of grit, a lot of self-love and practice, again, the reps, in order to get where I am today. So the first steps to forgiveness is forgiving yourself. And then it's about moving into the four quadrants that I call the four quadrants. So the first one is victim. The next one is victimized. And then it moves into survivor. Then it moves into thriver. So where in your life are you a victim? Starting from there, when you're a victim, you're saying, oh, I was robbed in my house and they stole all this stuff.
So I was furious and you put on that voice. Thanks for doing that. I was so sad talking about what we were talking about earlier. I just pictured like a big Santa Claus coming in your house, taking all your stuff, coming in your house right here where we are now, taking your crystals. Okay.
That's a big crystal sitting right next to me while we're doing this. So you say like, oh, I was just robbed by this guy. And you tell the story about in the present tense, like you just said, you know, before you're like, so many people are still talking about what happened to them years ago, like getting a car ticket or something like that. Like it just happened yesterday because they're a victim. Rather than saying, oh, yeah, I got a ticket before. Yeah, it was terrible. I went to court. So they're telling the story as being victimized. And then you move into survivor. Oh, that ticket. Oh, it happens to everybody in that corner. Ha! Yeah, I want to drive by there and get, you know, pulled over again. That cop was hot. Survivor. And then thriver is, yeah, paid the ticket, got it done with. Next, move on.
Was there an event or a point in your life that turned you from someone who maybe identified as a victim to someone who identified as a thriver? Or was it a slow process?
It was a slow process. It took a while. It took a lot of reps. It took a lot of work. And my ex-husband used to call me a victim. Also, you're being a victim. Being a victim. I was like, I'm a victim. It was in my blood. And then I'm like, oh my God, I'm a victim. And then until you realize that I was a victimaholic. I was a victimaholic.
A victimaholic, like an alcoholic or a talkaholic? They're just addicted to being a victim? Yeah, Jules is like, she's doing the whole like game show. Yeah, you got it, girl. That's right. The price is right. That was exactly it. Maybe I could take that crystal home. Okay, why would someone want to continue to be a victim? Personally speaking, I don't know if I would always put myself in the thriver category, but I definitely like waver between that and survivor. I don't like feeling like a victim. I like taking responsibility for everything. I like looking at how things impact me positively. Why would anyone want to stay in the little victim corner? Square. I don't know. I didn't win the Price is Right.
I don't think anyone wants to. I don't think anyone's intentionally doing it.
Not even for like sympathy, attention, getting connections with people through their trauma.
Yes. Some people do it on purpose. Some people do that intentionally. Some people want to be because like when you cry when you're a child, you're over-exaggerating everything. And what happens? Your parents give you attention and you feel soothed and you feel loved and you feel like you're getting attention and appreciated and seen. And sometimes those people don't feel like they've ever seen, heard, appreciated or anything because they don't do that for themselves. So they want to get it in other people. I feel the best in people. I feel people do not want to stay in victim, but they're so comfortable there. And then sometimes being uncomfortable is so uncomfortable, they shift back to what they know most is being a victim. When victims talk to other victims, they have a victim party. It's the oh, why me syndrome. And you're going to manifest those people. Then once you start moving out of victim, those people no longer want to be friends with you. And you start seeing those friends disappearing. You're like, oh my God, did so-and-so always complain that much?
Ooh.
And then something starts clicking in your brain saying, I'm not really enjoying hanging out with these people anymore.
They're so negative. All they talk about is other people's drama and their own drama.
Huh. And then that's when things start shifting in your life. And that's when you know you're moving out of victim, because you're no longer wanting to hang out with those people. And you're wanting to shift and manifest different realities into your life. Because if you are constantly being victimized by people around you and you're victimizing yourself, you're going to stay stagnant in where you are in your life. Love, money, friends, circumstances, prosperity, whatever you want, you're going to be stuck. And if people don't know why they're stuck in their life and why bad things always happen to them, it's because that's what they're mainly focused on. Again, we're moving back to manifestation.
Yeah, no argument for me there. So something I think is very interesting about the phenomenon of when you finally make the switch, and I'm going to call it a switch. I don't really think that's a transition. I do think it is black or white. Like, I think you're either in one square or not. You're either a victim or you're a survivor or a thriver. The last two, I think, can kind of bleed over. Something very interesting happens. People who are still victims will try to drag you down back with them. This is a social phenomenon that is observed everywhere. It's called crabs in a bucket. When one crab tries to get to the top, the other crabs just pull it down. So I'm not going to ask you why people do that, because we've established it's probably the way they were raised. Whatever. What can someone do when they are making the difficult switch and everyone around them, their community, does not want them to?
You get to find a different community. That community is no longer yours. You've vibrated away from them. And you're in a different frequency. That's why relationships stay together. They're still in a matching vibration. One has not grown more than the other. They're still stagnant. Or they're growing together a little bit higher, a little bit lower, but they're not moving apart from each other in that vibration.
Do you feel like someone always has to be in a community to be a survivor or a thriver? Can someone just do it all on their own?
I feel people need people. I don't feel we're here on this planet to be alone. But can people do it alone? 100,000,000%. I think it's happened before. I don't know people that, I'm not personally friends with people, that has grown and transitioned alone by themselves with no support from anyone else. And I mean books, TV, social media, YouTube, whatever that is, alone. I'm a possibilitarian. I think anything is possible. If you want something enough, it will happen. Mindset is mindset.
What are effective strategies you can use to keep people who are in their victimhood state away from you if they are trying to drag you back down to where you were before? What do you say? What do you do?
Number one, don't answer their phone calls.
Oh, I like this. I like that answer a lot, Jules. That's a really good, yeah. I already do that.
Number two, if you work with them, to say, I'm sorry, excuse me, I would love to just ground myself right now from whatever is happening in this conversation, and I do not have the capacity to hold space for you at this moment. Stop the conversation. Stop it. You get to cut that off. If someone has, I was going to say a joint up to your mouth, if someone has a needle of heroin and say, I'm going to stab you with this, what would you say?
Jules, what do you think keeps me so skinny? I'm just kidding. I've never done that drug or any drugs. Okay.
You would say no.
I don't think anyone would offer me heroin. I get what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. You would say no. And just with negativity, you get to say no. You have a choice. You have a choice to stay in that conversation, or you have a choice to kindly say no, thank you. And if you're around a person that lives with you, a sister, a brother, or whatnot, I am so sorry that this is going to be very challenging. My sister and I, we were complete opposites from each other. Complete opposites. We did not get along. We fought constantly. And I mean, physical fights. Yeah. To the point where she was arrested when she was taken away by I think it was a police officer or a fire. I know firemen held her down because she's tried to kill me when I was 13. Yeah. So it's just like I was around that type of atmosphere. My sister hated me. I hated her. But now my sister is my best friend in the world. I cannot go a day without talking to her. If you are around negative people, you get to figure out a way to tone them out and do more things that make you happy than make you sad. And that is so, so difficult. And I am so sorry for anybody that's listening that is going through this right now. I understand you. I feel you. I see you. And it sucks.
And get out as soon as you physically can. Get out of that atmosphere. It's just like an abusive relationship, but they're not hitting you. They're hitting you with the negativity. They're hitting you with their toxic behaviors. And it's just as bad. Leave. But if you can't, find an outlet that will be supportive of you for that moment. YouTube videos, Spotify podcasts, or find a book that you can fall in love with and an author that can just bring you to a dream state that can change your mindset to think more positively, to be supportive of what you're going through. Because until you're out of that atmosphere, you get to figure out how to dilute it. And you're in the situation for a reason. So let's figure out why you're in the situation to begin with, and let's turn it into a superpower.
So just as a little note for my listeners, remember I took the social psychology class a while ago, and there was this little fact that has always stuck with me, and it's about how you can talk about sad or negative things to people, but you cannot ruminate. So as humans, we tend to have a mental block of 2 times before we just get sick of hearing someone talk about something, which makes sense, because like, you're not someone's therapist, you're not someone's like emotional waste ground. So that's just an FYI. If you're worried you're being negative around other people, well, you would ask them, but also 2 times talking about something is a good rule of thumb. So if someone talks to you more than 2 times about something that's plaguing them, that might be a sign that that person is negative and is having a negative impact on your life. Jules, what are some other signs that someone is going to be a negative person in your life? What are the red flags?
This one's easy. When you leave that person, how do they make you feel? Log it. Have a journal. When I'm around Paige, I laugh. When I'm around Paige, I feel seen. I feel loved. I feel understood. When I'm around Alyssa, my friend, I feel supported. I feel appreciated. I feel nurtured. I don't feel any negative feelings when I leave them. I feel filled. I feel happy. And when I'm around other people who may or may not say and repeat things a few times, I take a note. How did I feel leaving that conversation? Did I feel exhausted? Do I feel frustrated? Do I feel angry? Do I feel I just don't want to be around them right now? Take a note. And then you go back to your notebook. You look at all the people, how they make you feel. And then you start weeding out the people you no longer want to be around. That's the red flags.
Just how you're feeling?
100%.
Yeah, I know our body is our greatest instrument ultimately for what we should do, where we should go, who we should be around. It makes me wonder, so much of emotional intelligence is reading other people's emotions so that you can respond to them and be a good influence in their life. Jules, what do you do if someone is not feeling like that around you? For whatever reason, someone's like, Jules, when I'm around you, just, you know, I can't imagine anyone feeling bad around you, but like, let's just say someone does. How do you respond?
I ask questions. I first start with, I would love to understand what I said that triggered something in you that made you feel this way. And you just reflect. I mean, I would love to reflect what you are experiencing in our relationship. And then you let them speak. When you let them speak, you reflect. So you feel misunderstood. You feel judged. You feel unappreciated. You feel exhausted. Okay, how do you want to feel when you're around me? Loved, seen, heard. Okay. Then you just take notes. And if somebody doesn't like something, then you ask some more questions. Who else in your life have made you feel not appreciated? When was the first time this happened to you? You're also in a way supporting them, giving them a gift. Gift of insight of where their trauma is. So if you are triggering something in them, you're actually seeing something in another person that traumatized you in your past. Because you cannot see something in someone that you do not see in yourself. It's not possible. So if you don't like something in someone, that means, ooh, I've already worked on that. I want to stay away from that. Or, ooh, that's what I do not like about myself. I do not want more of that.
Jules, what responsibility do you feel like we have towards the emotions of other people? So generally speaking, I just try to be pretty upbeat and be kind and do nice things for other people. If I meet someone who is in a really negative state, what is my responsibility to that person?
What do you want your responsibility to be?
I don't know. I'm asking you the questions, Jules. I'm not going to answer that. It's not a therapy session. Get real.
But it's like, what do they mean to you, honey? Every single person is different. Sometimes you just ask them, are you wanting me to support you and solve your problems? Or are you wanting me to be here and listen? You should never have expectations on anyone or anything. 0 expectations. If you have zero expectations, you will not get let down. It's only surprises.
Oh, he paid child support this month?
He paid only $100 of child support this month out of 1,000?
Oh, that's so amazing.
He must be doing a little bit better.
Is it so amazing? Don't want to talk too much about negative people because we do have some other subjects to cover, but I just want to ask you, what is the emotionally intelligent way to release yourself from negative people? Quite honestly, I feel like sometimes the best thing to do is just like, we've got a bunch of candles here and just blow it out like a candle. Very cut and dry, very quick, not a lot of emotion behind it. Only explanation if they ask. What do you think about that? And what would you recommend people do?
I would say, you know, I just really don't have the space for this right now. I don't have the space for hanging out in a new relationship or continuing this relationship. I want to focus on a certain amount of relationships in my life, and this is not one that's really serving me right now, where I'm headed and going. That can be harsh to hear sometimes with certain people. Or you just let it fade and you just like, I would love to connect with you when I have time to connect with you. Are you okay with me reaching out to you when I have time? And that's just putting out the light without hurting the person or you feeling you're hurting somebody and causing damage. You can be good at telling somebody I want to break up with you, or you can be really bad about it. It's just, again, it's like, who's this person to you? How have they impacted your life? And it can be gentle or you can be hard.
What emotions are related to forgiveness?
Acceptance, self-love, empathy.
All beautiful words. Someone causes a loss in your life. Is restitution always appropriate? Also, how can you make reparations for yourself if restitution is just plain impossible?
Restitution shows accountability. But when it's impossible, meaningful gestures, like an honest apology or taking steps to prevent future harm, can still provide healing.
Our culture places a huge premium on healing now. People spend so much money on trying to heal. I think some of those tools and groups, even if they cost money, can be very useful and good. Some of them, not so much. How would you recommend someone use their emotional intelligence to tell if something is going to be worthwhile for them or supportive of them?
I think you get to use discernment in everything that you do.
Is discernment an emotional intelligence tool?
It's an awareness tool. I think awareness is emotional intelligence. It makes you very aware of what people are feeling, how they're acting, and having discernment for other people's feelings. It's emotional intelligence. To answer your question, it's about the group that they attract and the culture that they bring around the organization is what really matters, because the drift is real. And what I mean by the drift is you are in a container and you leave the container and it's like you never went there, like Tony Robbins. If you don't keep going to his things over and over again, like, oh, I'm so pumped up. And then you leave, you're like, why am I so depressed? Like, I just walked on fire. I should be invincible and I should be able to do anything. But then you get home, you're like, I walked on fire. What was I thinking? And then you go back to the old ways. But when you have certain groups, you can stay in the container for as long as you want to, but they actually want you to leave. They want you to go into the world and support and bring it out to the world. So I say, when you go do these courses, take what feels vibrationally right for you and all the other stuff, be aware of it. Because don't forget, every single thing that you're learning, someone else believes in it. So as long as you have that in your index and you can actually speak someone else's language, they'll trust you more. There's more connection. It's like, oh yes, I know exactly what you're saying. I know how to speak your language. And that brings trust and connection. So take away, take what you want. Leave what you don't want, and hopefully you'll transform in a beautiful, emotionally intelligent way.
Emotional intelligence is a very valuable tool, skill, whatever we have for making friends. I feel like sometimes people bond over traumatic experiences or emotions, and those do create fast friendships. Like, I remember when I was in college, I took this very traumatic physics class. I am still so close with a lot of people I met in that class because it was so difficult. That I feel like is a positive example of something hard, but sometimes when you bond with people over traumatic experiences, when you get over them, it's like leaving your victim container. They are not always going with you. How can someone bond with people using positive emotions? Because I think that's a little bit harder, actually.
Oh, I love you and I love these questions. They're really good questions. People bond always through stories. That's why movies, that's why books and adventures and fires, you know, campfires are always a way that people are going to come together and bond and share each other's experiences and stories, real or fake. It doesn't matter. It brings people together. People will bond through funny stories, through comedy, through really funny situations that happened. And again, like you said, traumatic, but it's like a trauma bond, right? That's what we say, trauma bonds in relationships happen all the time. But positivity can also be a beautiful thing. Like you said before, it's toxic positivity. So people in the community notice that they all flock together. They do ceremonies together. They do sound healings together. They do song circles together. I think bonding can happen in any form, any vibration, any way, with any color, any shape, any size, any person. But yes, trauma bonding is locking yourselves into the most scariest situation you possibly could ever imagine and getting through it together. It happens every day. But I think you'd also bond with someone in a positive way. It's like, wow, I love how positive you are. I love every single time that I feel down that you're able to lift me up. And that also is a way in bonding and connecting and tethering a cord for another cord cutting ceremony if you need one or not with that person.
I'm going to watch videos of cord cutting ceremonies when I get home. I just have to see what this looks like. Oh my gosh. Sometimes the new age stuff, find it interesting. Look at me using positive terminology. Old me before this conversation would have said squicks me out. But you know what? It's just a different type of life. I have noticed, especially now, in the last 5 years, I feel like I've seen a resurgence in tribal style groups. You know, people are really desiring connection. They want to have shared experiences. Why do you think that is? Why do we have such a need to be a part of a group? Why is that sense of belonging so important to us?
I feel it's in our blood. We, since all of time, have been in tribes. And I heard someone say that we're supposed to be in tribes of 100 or less. And that's supportive of everything. Like, we were not meant to be single moms. We were not meant to raise a child by ourselves. We were meant to have support, family, friends, all live in community. And then if the tribe gets too big, they would split that tribe and they would separate and then they would build up the tribe again. We're not meant to do things alone. We're going back to the first part of the podcast. We're not meant to do things alone. We're not meant to be here alone. We're not meant to deal with our trauma alone. We're meant to be around that campfire telling our stories, not just once, but twice.
So speaking of tribes, the way you make friends ultimately is through communication. It can be verbal or nonverbal. How do emotions impact our communication?
Emotions impact everything about our communication. You can communicate anything you want. You could say something that could be presented in a harsh way or in a calm way. You can be saying the same thing, not changing the words, but changing your emotion will change what it says. So it's not really what you say, it's how you say it, and putting love and intention behind what you say and taking ownership of what you say and not being blaming. So it's kind of like saying, Paige, a story I create of you is that you don't like me, that when you met me, you just, you know, you weren't interested, you didn't want to ask me questions, you weren't friendly, you weren't smiling. And is that true? Like, is the story that I created about you true? And you're going to say, no. You know, no, I was just having a really bad day. My stomach was hurting. I had some bad chamomile tea that was probably poisoned.
It's like being a witch's house full of crystals and poison tea. Oh my God, black cat. All right.
Well, at least you didn't lose $10,000.
Oh yeah, that's right. There's a story on my show about someone who lost $10,000 to a witch. Also an example of someone who was experiencing a lot of negative emotionality and then was taken advantage of because of it. So, you know, being positive, I feel like, is a protective factor.
And that's pretty much it. You just take ownership of your story, the way you present it with love and intention, and you change the story of whatever happened to you as benefiting you in some way.
Well, I know we're coming up on time, so I do have one final question for you, which is, what strategies would you give people for emotional regulation? Because it is such a skill. I think it's honestly one of, if not the most important tool in emotional intelligence, being able to understand what your emotions are and change them.
Emotions are activated by how we interpret situations based upon past experiences, kind of like what we were just speaking on, and unmet needs. For regulation, I use tools such as breathing techniques, like deep breaths, like, or do the cat breath. Have you ever done that? Those little, you stick out your tongue all the way and you're like, try it. I want to see your tongue.
messing my tongue.
You journaling and, you know, I reframe thoughts, you know, changing the story of what we just spoke on as well. And so, for instance, like with kids, if we're going to talk about kids a little bit, you know, kids are still learning these skills and they would need extra guidance. So like when I'm supporting my daughter, Sage, is I get to guide her through these emotional techniques and have a lot of patience with that. Because adults have more capacity for self-regulation and often fail. They fail in a lot of senses of how they're reacting to children in a sense. But we often fall into reactive patterns if they haven't developed emotional awareness. So yeah, I would say I focus on breathing, journaling, and story changing.
I love that. Well, I think you're telling a beautiful story, Jules. Thank you so much for coming on my show.
I loved it. It was worth the year wait.
Oh my God, time really passes. Okay, all right, everybody, signing off.
They say our lives are already over from the view of a distant star. There we exist as dust motes and decaying cars. You say it's all. Don't you agree? As I wash blue black wine down the kitchen sink. When you talk about love, when you talk about us, when you talk about kids, when you talk about trust. need a bit more time.
Sharpen.